Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to another week of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
That's a three up for you, my friend.
Wow, all you had is a mushroom. I got three of those.
I got the fire. You got the mushroom, baby. Anyway, behind the glass over there is Andrew running the boards as usual. Hopefully we'll have some sound effects from him as well. He blew us up. All right, so we've got a couple of things to talk about this week, as always.
I think he's getting jealous of you having some sound effects under your power now.
You know, he's been jealous this whole time because I have all the mic time. Exactly.
Jealous.
So he has to
obviously
chime in every once in a while. So, Ara, you want to talk about going to school for games.
I've got so many things to bitch about today. I'm just giddy with delight.
Ara is always full of things to bitch about, and I'm happy about that because it keeps us talking on the radio.
So, I'm happy too.
I want to talk about our weekend and let the listeners know what we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about that, going to school, whether or not you should go to school.
For video games.
Now, obviously, I did it, and so I sort of have a point of view here. But I'm not in the development arena in terms of the game industry. Now, I have a friend who's actually co-hosted with me on the show before, Nate. Nate Cox has done the show in the past, and he went to school for games and is actually working as a game developer now. So if we're able, we may actually call him up and get him on the air tonight. And certainly if anyone wants to address questions to game developer, well, Ara is always a game developer.
And this is interesting because now we'll have, like, you know, a guy who went to school who's a game developer, and a guy who didn't go to school is a game developer, and a guy who went to school who's not a game developer.
Exactly.
So we'll have all permutations of the triangle.
Almost.
Almost.
Is that right?
Well, I guess, you know, the guy who didn't go to school and isn't in the game developer, but I guess we don't care about that guy.
I guess that's true. All right, now I also wanted to talk about piracy a bit because EA did something very interesting. So I'm going to talk about that, but we'll save that for last if we have some time. Then, of course, there's a bunch of other things going on, like you brought up the lady who died with the Wii.
Yeah, I know that story's about a week old, but this is just fascinating to me.
What part of it fascinates you so much? And I guess you want to go over the story for the people who don't know about it.
So, I guess about a week ago or something, there's a radio station did a promotion. They did a contest and they called it what? Hold your Wii for a Wii. And I guess there's a couple different interpretations that could be had with that statement. But it was a contest where you drunk water and you just tried not to pee for as long as possible.
Yeah, last person who has to pee gets the Wii.
Right. So first they give you a little 8-ounce cup of water every 15 minutes, and then as people have to uncontrollably start going to the bathroom, they kind of up the ante, and this may be hearsay, but I heard that you end up drinking like 2 gallons of water.
That's what I read in some article somewhere. Yeah. Essentially, they make you drink a lot of water. Now, apparently the people at the radio station didn't know that I guess there's such a thing as water intoxication.
Yeah, apparently you can die from drinking too much water and holding your Wii.
Now, I knew this, but I really didn't.
Even though the woman who died didn't have a Wii. So.
All right. So anyway.
I couldn't resist. I had to do it.
I understand. And I'm just going to plow through that and pretend I didn't hear it.
Just keep going.
So this woman died because she drank too much water without expelling it from her system. And I don't know. Like, I thought water intoxication was something that happens only in extremely extremely extreme
right
situations. I wouldn't have expected it to happen like this. But
well, here's the thing, whatever. Is that she didn't win the Wii. She got second place Justin Timberlake tickets.
Okay.
So the person who won survived and lived.
When did she die then?
Apparently it was later? Sometime afterward, because according to the CNN report I have in front of me, she was crying, and as she was leaving, she called, one of the supervisors of the show or something like that, complaining about headaches.
Uh-huh.
So apparently, you don't die right away. But I mean, this is just crazy.
Do you think if they gave her the Wii that her family wouldn't sue like they are suing?
No, I think they'd probably sue anyway. I mean, the Wii's really good.
What if she won? Maybe it'd be, maybe that would be like the case settlement.
Well, in all seriousness, while being a little bit ignorant of all the details of the situation, it sounds like, maybe she had some kind of, she was more highly disposed to have some kind of, you know, bladder problem or something.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, what are these people thinking at the radio station? I mean, okay, you're going to drink 2 gallons of water. Your bladder, I mean, how big is your bladder?
Well,
it's
now,
not two
now,
gallons.
Hang on a second.
Where's that water going?
The Nathan's hot dog eating contest, dude. People are putting their, you know, far more stuff into their little gullets. And I wouldn't have, if I came up with this contest, I wouldn't have expected something like that to happen. Luckily, it wasn't me who thought it up.
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah. Which brings up the other question, which is, you know, what other crazy, insane things are people willing to do for video games?
A lot. And actually, there's a radio station here in Phoenix that has a night show, you know, yeah. A couple of guys doing a show.
One of those extreme shows?
Not extreme, just a couple of guys who have a fun show at night. And they had around Christmas, they had a contest where people would do crazy stuff every night. And I remember one of the contests, I think the fourth in a series of five was for a PS3. People did crazy stuff. They were shaving certain parts of their bodies and, you know, women with hair that hadn't been cut for like 20 years were cutting their hair and people were possibly stapling
exciting.
Parts of their body to things. I don't know.
Okay, now that's just gross.
Anyway, they were doing some crazy stuff, drinking things that shouldn't be consumed.
All right, you know what? I have to interject something really quick, okay? I got this new issue of Game Informer magazine, and there's this new game called Blue Dragon, right?
Yeah, not so new in Japan, but new
right,
for us.
But for us. Now, okay, there's this artist. His name is Akira Toriyama.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are aware of him. He does all the Dragon Ball Z
right.
art.
Dragon Ball Z. He's done art for, like, Chrono Trigger, you know, the Dragon Warrior games.
Anytime you see a spiky-haired guy.
Okay, yeah. There's this kid on the front, and can this guy, I mean, can we have someone other than a little kid with spiky hair?
Isn't it Goku?
It looks exactly like Goku, which looks exactly like, you know, okay, at least in the spikiness of the hair, from Chrono Trigger, and, I mean, it's like, it just feels like there's just some sick joke being played on me as a consumer. Like, we're just going to draw the same character over and over and, oh, you'll just
well,
eat it
I
up.
Mean, look at the American standard. If you do any sort of media, you need to have a beautiful girl, right? And it's always going to be, you know, the girl with the long hair, the giant boobs, the thin waist, the long legs.
Right, like, but I mean, come on, like, kid in a tank top with spiky hair.
And sandals.
And
always got to be wearing the sandals.
I mean, he's even doing the Dragon Ball pose. I mean, what's going on here?
No, the Dragon Ball pose is the hands with the...
Yeah. No, he's doing that, but they've got another pose, which is like, you know, I don't know what
the
he's
crane.
Doing. But
yeah, I don't know.
But
like Ara said, he's got a lot to bitch about tonight, and I think this is the
crazy.
Icing on the cake.
Give us something. I mean, like, can you draw anything other than spiky hair? I mean, just once, maybe?
All right. So let me turn the tables here and talk about something that made me happy. Before I came to the show, I was packing up your Xbox 360, which you kindly let me borrow, and I was thinking to myself, wow, I did a lot this weekend. I had fun, right? Went to a little poker tournament on Friday, and then on Saturday, had people over to play some Xbox 360.
We had a lot of fun with that, actually.
We did, yeah. You came over. You brought a friend of yours, and I had some friends over, too, namely my roommate and his brother. And I think there was, yeah, a couple other people stopped by, too. So anyway, we had, for the first time ever, at Casa de Weissman, we had two projectors, two 92-inch screens running.
Which skillfully allowed us to cheat by, you know, viewing the other person's screen.
We didn't do that, though. Did you?
Well, I mean, I tried.
I didn't. I consciously didn't look over there. Anyway, so...
I'm bringing a mirror next
we
time.
We have enough Xbox Live accounts that we're all on Xbox Live, and we're playing with some friends of ours on Live as well, and we've got, like, the 8-person Gears of War game going. And that and then playing yesterday with my roommate and myself again, like, makes me realize more and more every day I play the Gears of War game how bad the online play is. And I think I'm the only person who feels this way. Everyone loves that game. But
there's something, there's an observation I had while playing Gears of War.
This is the first time you really played it, by the way.
Well, second time. I mean, I played it a little bit, the one-player experience, but, like, what? It was about, I don't know, probably about 20 minutes of game time.
Yeah. And still, this is the first time playing online, though, which
right.
is very different than the single-player game.
Absolutely. It was really strange because the whole game feels very kind of, maybe a little claustrophobic, right? I mean, the spaces seem really small, and you don't really seem to have as much of a latitude of action or motion, at least, as you do in, I don't know, something like Halo, for example.
I can see what you mean about being small.
I don't know if it was just the way that the screen was cut up with our views, because we had split screen and we were sharing a screen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the guys, your hulking character's, you know, shoulder and head are like right in front of the horizon where, you know, your eyes are drawn to, where you're looking most of the time. And I found that very disconcerting.
That's not something that ever bothered me, and perhaps more playing the game would help you. I don't know. Widescreen makes it weird, gives you an extremely, well, split screen, I mean, gives you an extremely wide screen because it splits it horizontally on what's already a widescreen. But, you know, I've said time and time again, not on the air, that I think they need to split it in even proportions, have two widescreens, one on the top left, one on the bottom right, something like that, if they're going to split it up just two ways, because I think the proportion is a lot more valuable than the screen real estate.
But I just wished I could see more, you know, even though, you know, I was probably seeing a lot, you know, on an absolute scale. It just felt like I wasn't able to see enough.
Now, the problem with that game is that it sucks. It has nothing to do with what you can see and what you can't see. The problem with that game is that you play for 2 seconds and then you're dead. And
there's no respawning. Yeah. Well, there's all of that, too.
A good game shouldn't have downtime every 2 minutes.
Well, I can see why they did that, but yes, it's a very very punishing element.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Sure. They should have the option to not do that. That's all. I'm just asking for the option.
There's just a couple switches you need to flip to do that. It's very simple.
Anyway, we'll be back after the break. We're going to talk about going to school for games, and then I think we'll even bring over my friend Nate. Thanks.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And I'm Alon.
And we've got Andrew back there, hopefully with a whole bunch of sound effects for us.
Hey, can you blow me up, Andrew? I'd like to be blown up. All right, now...
He's not having it today.
Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about video game schools. And before we do, I should mention, we mention our wonderful sponsor, UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. They have a website at uat.edu. So if you like what we have to say, or you don't like what we have to say, but you decide to go to school, well, that's one place to look, and it's where I went. And it's where a guest that we may have on tonight, Nate Cox, went as well. And has a job in the actual gaming industry. Now, Ara did not go to school.
I didn't go to school. I did it all myself.
You didn't go to school, but not for games, right?
Actually, no, yes. I did go to school.
I don't pick up deadbeats off the street to run the show.
Just regular school, although I hated every minute of it. But that's a different story.
All right.
So some time ago, a listener asked this in an email. He said, is it worth going to school first to get into the game industry?
For the record, we've had many, many requests to have that question answered on the air and off the air.
So I've got a little diatribe here that I want to go into, and then maybe this will spur some nice discussion.
Go for it.
So I really hate to say it, but, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, who ask these kinds of questions like, oh, like, how can I get into the gaming industry? And, oh, I like games. I want to get into games. What do I do? And stuff like that. I actually wrote an article for Game Informer about a year and a half ago about, you know, what do you do if you want to get into the game industry? And it's really funny because I wrote this article telling people how I got in because, you know, I'm no expert, you know, but I can relate to people what I did, which worked for me. And I got a lot of email response. And the funny thing was can you give us more, like, tips on how to get into the game industry? So this incensed me just a little bit. So kind of like in response to that, you know, what I wanted to say is that, you know, I really hate to say it, but it seems like the people who ask the most questions about how to get into the game industry are probably the least likely ones to become successful at it. You know, the first question you should ask yourself is, you know, do you want to be a professional game developer because you love making games? Or do you just love the idea of playing games and making games? Now, there's a subtle but important distinction here because...
I would argue that it's not so subtle.
Well, for some people, it may be. To me, it's glaringly obvious, but just to give people the benefit of the doubt, right? Our industry is, I mean, there's so many bad games, okay? Our industry is filled with people that are just coasting by, helping to produce more and more mediocre games, because these people don't really love making games. They love being associated with the industry. They love telling people that they're game designers. They love being part of something that's hip and cool and popular, but they don't have the commitment to put their heart into their craft, to make it the best it can be. You know, the giants of game making didn't spend too much time wondering, you know, oh, how are we going to get into the game industry, if they even thought about it at all. People like John Carmack and Cliff Bleszinski, I mean, they loved making games so much that they just figured out how to do it on their own. You know, they had that passion, and their creative efforts had such a strong impact that they ended up creating an industry for themselves. So if you're interested in making games for its glamour, you know, just because, like, oh, you know, oh, I like games, so, you know, I want to make games.
It's funny to me that you say glamour.
You know, some people say, oh, what's glamorous about the video game industry? But it is. It really is glamorous, you know. But, you know, all these people that are interested for those reasons, you know, do me a favor. Find another pursuit that you love more, because I don't want you involved in this industry. You know, go do that instead. If you really, really love making video games, then put your money where your mouth is. Spend some time, make a small game, or build some mods, or create a few levels. There's tons of tools out there. There's so many different ways that you can do this kind of thing. You know, spend 6 months or a year on it. If you have what it takes, employers will notice, and the industry will actually end up coming to you. You know, if what you can make is really good, you may even end up creating an industry of your own, just like the big shots do. So school for me really is like nothing more than a tool for learning. You know, the more I think that the more effort you spend on creating something, the easier time you'll have in, you know, quote unquote, getting in.
Well,
that's my rant.
The problem is that making a game or a mod or something has become so complex that you can't really do it on your own. And as we know,
partly, yes, but you can do some things on your own. For example, you know, you can take,
but not the things that'll get noticed.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I got lucky, right? But I don't think I was too lucky. You know, one of the things I did was I quit my job, and I spent
definitely
6 months.
Definitely got lucky doing that. That's a hard achievement.
That part actually was lucky, because I was able to do some freelance work on the side at the same time.
Okay.
So that was lucky. But, you know, I spent about 6 months, about 300 hours, teaching myself the suite of tools for Unreal, which is free. You go buy a copy of Unreal, you get all the tools for free. And I made a level for that game. You know, I designed and built it from scratch. And, you know, I used some of their assets in the game. But
By the way, you've not ever shown me this level that led you to the game.
Yeah, I'd love to show it to you, actually.
Okay, keep going.
You know, you use some of their assets, but you can put as much into it as you want, right? Like, I did some custom sound work. I did some custom programming. I did some custom graphics, all that stuff. You know, I used a lot of their built-in pieces, too, right? And that piece of work that, you know, I made when I was done, that was directly responsible for me landing a game designer gig some months later.
Now, were you making this with the intent of getting into the game industry, or were you making it just because you were curious and wanted to do it?
Well, it was kind of like partly both, you know, because, I mean, I didn't just want to get into the game industry. I wanted to be involved in making games. You know, this was something that I always knew was what I wanted to do as kind of like my life's work ever since I was a kid. You know, the problem was, you know, I was just kind of being wishy-washy about it at first, right? Because, yeah, you know what? I'll tell you, it's hard to do something like that, you know? It's hard to just pour all your effort into something completely new and foreign to you when you don't have any experience about it.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of dedication.
It does. And that's tough. It's tough as hell. And, you know, it took me about 4 years in the job I was in to kind of like, you know, muster up the courage and get sick enough, so to speak, you know, to actually, you know, have the wherewithal to dedicate myself to doing what I did.
Yeah. See, and what's funny to me, though, is that, well, it's not funny, really. It's interesting that you're able to do this, right? And there are a lot of people who work well by themselves, and then it's different when they're forced to work in groups. And so that's why I think school is valuable. Like,
that's a very good point, actually.
You were able to make your level working all on your own and do all the different aspects of it. So you had full creative control. And
right.
I know that as a designer, I've talked to you, and I have a lot of game developer friends that I get to hang out with, partly because you introduced me to a lot of them. But you hear of a lot of angst that happens for someone who's forced to work in a group when the group environment isn't always conducive to efficiency.
Right. A lot of times it's not. And actually, that's an excellent point. And I think that probably, you know, I was thinking about this topic earlier. I think that that's probably one of the most important things that you get out of school when you do some kind of group project, because, yeah, that group dynamic is very, very valuable.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, so you even, I mean, you did everything on your own, but then you go over to work at Rainbow, and you've got...
Actually, before that, it was Acclaim Studios Austin before they closed down, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
But I mean, you work in groups, and then you realize, okay, there's all these things that I haven't done before, or experiences that I haven't had because you're forced to work in a group, and you said, okay, I had autonomy over this
right.
before, and now I don't, and I have to deal with, you know, varying personalities and all that stuff.
And even within that, it can vary infinitely. It's
yeah.
incredible.
And so we're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to give a call to my buddy Nate, who, like I said, went to UAT and now works for a very large game studio. So hopefully we'll get him on the horn and talk about his experience, which varies directly from ours.
Mario, you're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Once again, we're back. Chatterbox Video Game Radio on the air. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And over there, we've got Andrew. Now, I've also brought on my friend Nate Cox, who I said that earlier in the show, used to go to UAT. He went to the University of Advanced Technology, just like I did, graduated and everything, and then he got an actual job in the actual video game industry, not just blabbing his mouth on a radio show.
Alan, I have an idea for another promotion.
Yes, like the Wii for a Wii promotion?
Well, speaking of Nate Cox...
Does it have to do with boxes?
Yes.
Could we do a promotion, how about rub your for an Xbox?
Yes.
Put it together.
It's hard for you to say, isn't it?
It's hard for me to say because I don't have the button's not working.
Okay.
So I can't, but you can only think.
I can understand rubbing your box for a box.
No, I'm thinking of Nate Cox.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we could go so many places.
Interject that.
And thank you for that. So anyway, Nate went to UAT, and then he went to work for a very large video game company. He's not been there terribly long, but
long enough that
he's figured out what's going on there. And so let's bring him on the air. I don't know what buttons to push here, so Andrew, you're in control of it. Nate, can you hear me?
I can.
Right on. Now,
hey, what's going on, Nate?
This is Ara.
What's up, dude?
Those of you who've listened for a long time might recognize Nate. Like I said earlier, he's hosted the show with me before. Was it just once or twice, Nate?
Just one time, I think.
Right on. It was good, though. He came into the studio. We talked about stuff. He wasn't yet working, but now he is. So we've only got about 10 minutes here. Start off by telling me a little bit of what you do, and if you can say so, what company you work for.
Okay. I'm a game designer on Medal of Honor Vanguard for Electronic Arts in L.A.
Vanguard. So which version is that? What console?
That's going to be on the PS2.
Right on. Any others? Is it like a multi-system thing?
No, it's just PS2 exclusive. It's going to be the last one using the, I don't know if it's the actual last one, but the rumor is it's the last one of the Medal of Honor series for the current gen. And so it's just PS2 exclusive. There's all kinds of good reviews for it on like IGN and GameSpot and stuff like that.
Okay,
and
so
if you want any of the official word about the game, that's where you go, not to me.
Oh, I understand. So you say you're a game designer. Does that mean... Like R is just the game designer conceptually, what's going to happen in this game, how's it going to work, but he doesn't actually lay down any code or any graphics, of course.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Well, I know that you said you do a little bit of level design, but when it comes to actual final product, you're not the one producing it,
well,
right?
Well, this is very interesting because, maybe Nate can speak to this a little bit, but at the different projects that I've been on and the different companies that I've been on, there's the role of the game designer can vary quite a bit. So for a while, you know, I was doing stuff that it was primarily conceptual and primarily just like high level stuff. And you know, on the other hand, other times, you know, like when I worked on the Red Star, right.
Now available through Amazon.com.
You know, but I heard it's coming out in 2 weeks, actually.
I'm telling you, it's been out for months, dude. You can buy it on eBay right now.
I don't really believe that, but that's even better if it's true. But anyway, you know, I would do some as much work as like, you know, conceptual design and actual like implementation of, you know, enemy behaviors and things like that, like all the way from start to finish, like except for like actual art assets.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very similar to what it is and where I'm work. And Like, when I first got hired on the job, I was working on Medal of Honor Airborne for the 360. Also can't say much about it, but it was a very much a conceptual position. They would, like, basically give me a box of limitations and say, this level needs to meet these criteria. And I had, you know, some advisors, and then the whole pre-production team was amazing, and they just put together some really awesome stuff, and then I just kind of would argue that for the points of gameplay and within this level, working with that group.
Now, have you noticed that the art team had that in mind when they created that stuff, or did you really have to point out, hey, wait a minute, no, this is caused when you do this, or this creates a problem, or this is what we can do to fix this?
Yeah, that was my job. More like looking ahead to see what players might do, to see what's fun, you know, like where objectives might be. They all obviously had a ton of input in that as well. But me and the other lead game designer over that section of the project had final say on that stuff.
Okay. Now, I know you weren't listening in on the part of the show earlier when Ara was talking about how he got into the game industry. He did it through just, you know, working on his own, creating a level in Unreal, and then that got him noticed. And
brute force through sheer anger.
Yeah, and many months of unemployment. And so he was able to do it that way, and I pointed out the contrast between, okay, he did that, and he had full control over what he was developing, and then that got noticed, but now he's thrust into an environment where he's in a group of people, and he's always, you know, having to, I don't know how it works where you're working, I haven't been there, but, you know, either having to cast votes and determine, basically the point is there's a group of people making decisions.
Right, right.
Whereas you went to school for this, and we were saying one of the benefits of going to school, and I know how UAT works personally, because I was there too, is that, you know, you're always in a group atmosphere, well, for the most part, and a lot of the times when you're creating anything of value that you're going to show to recruiters or whatever, it's something that you've done in a group, so you already have the experience of butting heads and complaining about this gameplay element versus that, and actually producing things, and I want to know a little bit more about how you were sort of homegrown from the school side instead of, you know, how it contrasts with Ara, and if you think that's been beneficial to you and what sort of experiences you might have.
Yeah, it's been very beneficial. Just like you nailed it on the head. It's just like working with people, especially students that are not getting paid for working on this project. I worked in several different capacities on different mod projects there at school. I just like went from just being a modeler or a level designer to leading a project, you know, and so I saw several different aspects, and leading the project was definitely hard. There was a lot of communication breakdowns that I had to deal with, and it resulted in ultimately the failure of my project. But, I mean, we got a lot accomplished, and I learned so much about dealing with issues like that and communicating with people, getting people to work together when they might not be the most motivated. I'm very fortunate now to be working with people that are getting paid and therefore are highly motivated in what they do. They also love what they do, too.
So would you say that was it easier to work with people while you were in school on the school projects or what you're doing now?
What I'm doing now by far, because everyone that I'm on a spectacular team at EA, really. The Vanguard team, everyone really loves the game and loves what they're doing, so it's just a tremendous environment.
That's awesome.
There's certainly an advantage to having a group of people who are focused on a singular goal, whereas at school, everyone, you know, you've got this report to write and this thing to do and this assignment. And I remember, you had talked to me. I didn't really get involved in the mod that you led, but I know you had asked me to become involved, and I sort of gave a little input at the beginning. But, you know, one of the things you struggle with as the manager of a team is just knowing that there's all these people, okay, we've got 20 people who say they want to be a part of it, but you know only, you know, 6 or 7 of them are actually going to do what you want and come through. And I think you experienced some of that, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I had some really good people on my team, and I had some really bad people on my team, and that's just the way it goes. You know, I'm not going to say who they were, because, like, and it's not that they were bad people, it's that maybe we didn't have the best dynamic working together. Maybe, you know, there's several factors. I know one guy had several personal problems come up, you know, right at the crunch mode of our project, and it's like, there's nothing I could do about that to help him out or to get that stuff, so we essentially had to cut it from our project, and, you know, it's just learning to deal with that stuff was very valuable.
Yeah, I found that the chemistry that you have between the people working on a project really makes a huge difference on, you know, how things go. You know, when I was working on the Red Star, like, we were so on the same wavelength. I can't even describe to you. It was just like a dream come true. Like, we were We were like this. I mean, you can't see how close my fingers are, but they're real close.
They're touching.
They're absolutely touching.
I have good imagination.
With a lot of surface area. So, I mean, on the other hand, you know, I think that, you know, in some cases, you know, in a professional context, you know, sometimes the chemistry cannot be as good because, you know, if you're with a team that like really, really wants to flip and do what they're doing right now, this second, then that's great. But I think a lot of times there's a tendency, you know, because, you know, you're making a game for somebody else, really, you know, so that changes the thing. Like something that I think is a little more idealistic and in some cases better potentially for chemistry on like some kind of independent project or student project is that you can do really whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. And well, I see where you're coming from, but I kind of disagree in one aspect. I think that, yeah, that's great to work on what you want to work on, but that's part of the discipline. You got to realize that, you know, not everyone has the money or the support system to make that kind of game, chemistry or not. And it really comes down to is do you have the talent to own the game yourself, whatever project you're given? And I can see that. You know, I know there's a lot of people on my project that don't necessarily want to work on a World War II shooter. But you can see how they develop this ownership for what they're working on, and that's where the true chemistry, I think, lies. That's where the real talent comes from.
So you're saying that even though it might not be a game that they're dedicated to in their hearts, they still dedicate themselves to exactly the bit that they're doing, and it shows.
I know where you're coming from, but you know, I've seen what people can do when, you know, they can pour their heart into what they're doing, and that's just totally blown the doors off of any kind of thing that's, you know, restrictions imposed by, you know, people who got the money.
So have you noticed, Aura,
that's what I'm saying. It's all about attitude. If you can have the attitude that I'm going to pour my heart into this and make it my own, regardless if you like the design or not, it can be something great. And you know, that's why there are these franchises around like this, Medal of Honor and like Madden and things like that.
Hold that, Nate. We got the music playing, Nate. We're going to come back. We're going to keep you on the line, and we'll talk about this for another 10-minute segment. Anybody who wants to call in, we got a few minutes. 866. What is it?
536-1100.
It's on the website. All right, well, this is Chatterbox. Andrew seems to think he's got special rejoinder music. Okay. I don't get it, but Andrew seems to love this stuff. All right, so I want to bring Nathan Cox back onto the show. He's a game developer. Turn the music off. All right.
Is that really Mormon, Nathan?
Yeah, that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir right there.
Yeah, he knows. See?
That's hardcore.
I'm trying to tell him, but my friend.
Isn't it?
We don't have to bring this stuff up on the air. We really don't.
Can we have this playing in the background the whole time?
I'd rather not.
And you turn the music off. All right. All right, so anyway, we're bringing back on Nathan Cox. He went to UAT, just like I did, but he got a real job, unlike me. And now he works for EA, and like he said earlier in the show, he's working on Medal of Honor. What was the subtitle?
Vanguard.
I want to say Paladin.
Which, how many Medal of Honor games have been made thus far? Do you remember?
I don't know.
A lot.
Know.
And then it stems
a
off,
lot.
Branches off into different consoles and stuff. It gets weird.
Yeah, they just gave up on the numbers.
Well, yeah. I don't think they ever
had a number.
I don't
like numbers, personally. I really wish Halo would have gotten away from the Halo 2 and Halo 3 and any other game that's Half-Life 2 and all the other 2s.
Well, at least their bonus map packs are called Kill Hacker.
Yeah, I think if you really want to tell a story, then you know, you should name it something.
All right.
Maybe name it chapter. Anyway.
You can call it Hold Life.
So let's move back into what we were trying to talk about before, about going to school for gaming, whether or not it's valuable. Aura has an argument against it, but can also understand the value, right? I think the understanding the group dynamic might be the most valuable part, but I'm curious if you agree. What do you think is the most valuable thing that you got out of going to school in terms of getting your job in the industry?
I think the group dynamic was probably second most valuable. The most valuable thing for me was, and it just really depends on what type of person, if you're like Andrew, or wait, whom are we talking with here?
This is Aura.
Aura.
You could be like Andrew, though.
Andrew is the guy running the sound.
But I'm thinking about Aura, like, he's very independent and obviously went off and did some cool stuff that got noticed. Whereas I need to kind of immerse myself in an environment that's just like, and so I would go to school and work for ridiculous amounts of hours because that's what I would go there to do. When I'm at home,
I get
distracted by like the 360 and
actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because and maybe you can Nathan, maybe you can echo this if you think it's true. But yeah, it seems like my impression, you know, from people who told me about, you know, video game schools is that like, yeah, a lot of people go there. And they're just like, oh, you know, well, I'm going to go to video game school and I'm going to get a video game job. And they just goof off all day long. And they don't understand that the school is like, it's a vehicle, right?
So yeah,
you can choose to take advantage of it, you know. You obviously, you know, totally busted your tail and, you know, you reap the rewards. But it's not something that comes automatic.
No, not even remotely, like. I killed myself there, and Alon will attest to that. He came back one day. He's like, "What the heck are you still doing here?" So
yeah, I would do that a lot. Anytime I go to school, I knew Nate would be there. I think you working at the school might have also.
Yeah, I actually got a part-time job at the school, taking people on tours of the school. You know, when they were interested in coming there, and I'd tell them straight out, I'm like, "This is all on you. You know, this is going to provide you with software. It's going to provide you with resources. It's going to provide you with people. Some that do know what they're doing, and some that don't know what they're doing. And it's just all what you make of it."
Yeah, and I think, I mean, people and parents and teachers always tell you that that's true. Like, you've got to make the most out of it, and you've got to do your work and all that. But it's far more true in this sort of industry. Anything that is where actual talent is a requisite. I think acting is, like, I always compare the video game industry to Hollywood, right? And I think they're two very similar things where if you go to school for it, you can't just, you know, learn by the book and learn what's going on with it. You have to actually try hard. You have to use the vehicle, like Ara said, to your best advantage. You have to make use of it and actually go after it. And whereas I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, all right, I'm going to take the tests. I'm going to do the assignments. And that was it. And that's why I went to school twice. I got 2 degrees and I didn't do anything with them because I didn't make the best of the time there. Because
there's the clinical approach and there's the passionate approach is the thing.
Yeah. And so I don't know what I'm passionate about. But anyway,
radio, obviously.
That's one thing.
Okay.
But yeah, you've got to make the most out of it. And the people who do that succeed. And it's so much more true in this industry than like when you go to school for accounting.
Right. And I have another point to make about going to school that I think is a huge advantage because it's really, really hard to get a job in the game industry. It's really hard. And so if you have a bachelor's degree, there are a ton of companies out there that will pay you 30 and 40 grand a year because you have a bachelor's degree. It doesn't matter what it's in. And you know, it's like you could go work for an insurance company, but you need a bachelor's degree. They don't care what it is. And so it's like, yeah, you got to pay bills. And there's also all kinds of other neat skills you can learn while going to a technical school like that. Like, you can learn HTML, you can learn XHTML, you can learn Flash. You can learn all kinds of stuff that can get you part-time work or even full-time work until you can acquire that position in your dream job.
You mean so take a hit for a while you do what you can to actually get noticed?
I mean, you should always pursue what you want to do, but, you know, if sometimes you just got to go work somewhere else, and if you can actually work in a career, it's better than working at a grocery store.
Yeah. No,
no offense to any grocery store workers. I like the grocery store workers.
I'd like to think that anyone who does work as a bag boy would aspire to greater things.
I would like to think.
Well, you know, we do need people to, you know, bag
and speaking of grocery baggers,
high schoolers, right? You know, they shouldn't be people that, you know, should be in college.
Speaking of grocery baggers and people in college, we've got a caller and we've got a couple minutes to take him. So I want to take.
I'm about dropping calls.
Okay, stop talking. You're on the air, buddy. You're on the air with Chatterbox. So as I understand it, we've got two people on the line.
Yeah, true.
All right. So one of them is Nameless Ted from the Chatterbox forums.
Yeah.
Right, which you can find at chatterboxgameshow.com.
Hey, I think Ted is a name. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Ted is a name. All right, and who's the other person we've got on the line here?
I'm Puppet. I'm from Destructoid. Ted goes there, too.
From Destructoid. Okay, we can barely hear you, so you're going to have to put your mouth closer to that receiver or talk louder, or Andrew, just do whatever we can to make us able to hear them.
Make it louder.
Do that
Puppet.
Magic. All right, hold up. I got to go into my control panel. I'm on Skype.
What's going on here?
Let's get to the point, huh?
Yeah, somebody ask a question or you're getting turned off.
All right. All right. I was just going to add to the school kind of thing. I guess I was just going to say, like, Aura said, like, he just kind of did his thing and managed to get in. But, like, most people aren't going to be able to do that, even if you are passionate, especially this day and age, trying to learn tools that are going to be coming out in the next few years with the next generation of, you know, DirectX 10 and even, like, PS3 and 360. Like, having a good school, at least. I mean, some schools aren't good for gaming, but having a good school would be, gives you the resources to...
Yeah, and that's one of the advantages of UAT in particular, because they focus on gaming. And at this point, I'm not trying to just pimp out the sponsor. And, like, it's what I know, because I went there, and Nate would agree here. Like, I know that when I walk through the main area where everybody works on the computers there, like, they've got a GameCube development kit. That, yep. You know, if you want to do a GameCube project, you can, because it's there. Nobody in their house, well, it's unlikely someone in their house would have a GameCube development kit and the other tools that a university that focuses on that would have. And I think, Nameless, you attend the same school, right?
I do.
Yeah.
So I want to address something you said.
He actually
like
was
seconds.
A listener, right? He was a listener.
Yeah.
Heard the show, heard all the ads, and then went to school at UAT.
That's awesome. Let me see if I can squeeze this in before the show's over.
All right, we got 30 seconds. Go for it.
There's, you know, I know that you mentioned, it's really, really hard to, you know, get a job in the gaming industry. And, you know, even if you have all these resources and all these things, you know, the thing is, like, yeah, you know what? It's really flipping hard. And, yeah. You know, you will probably have to try over and over and over and do the same thing over and over and over to get what you want.
Right.
But if you really want it, that's what you got to do.
All right. Thank you very much, Nate, for being on the show. Thank you, Nameless, for calling in, and everybody else for listening. ChatterboxGameshow.com and All Games Radio to listen to the show. Sorry we're cutting this short. We're going to go. Thanks again, Nate.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bass are belong to us.